and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. We're back, Steve. We're back.
Well, I'm back.
You're back.
You've been off interviewing famous people.
Three special guests in a row over 2 weeks. It's been a busy old time.
I have to say, I listened to the latest podcast only this morning whilst walking a dog, and it was absolutely fantastic.
With Mike Sampson.
Yeah, absolutely. I learned so much about Discovery.
He is a top chap, and he's got lots of great stories. And
very humble.
Yeah, he is. He's really... it's great to hear it directly from him, like that, how it came about and what his input was into it and things like that. I learned a lot that day.
Really
hopefully
good.
I could get some of that across in the podcast.
And it was nice to hear, I'm a bit crazy today, Fuzz and Tim, obviously their podcast, and they talk more than me.
Yeah.
They kept that, honestly, you were like an innocent bystander.
But that is why they work so well as a TV duo.
Yeah, you can tell.
Because they bounce off each other constantly. Yeah, definitely. But no, it was really good fun. But we're back now. Normality has resumed for a little while.
So we're going to probably have like listeners' questions, products of the week, feature of the week.
I'll tell you what, listeners' questions, we've got developments. You may remember a few episodes ago, we had an email from a chap who wanted to sort of find out how to get his other half into Land Rovers, his girlfriend, and he wasn't quite sure.
Is this where I may have said, change girlfriend?
Possibly. Ooh, but anyway.
Yeah, dodgy subject.
We've got developments. Yeah. The girlfriend, I believe, I may have put two and two together and got eight. I think his other half has been in touch.
Oh.
But it's all good.
Okay, good.
Elise, she gets in touch and says, hi, Steve and Martin. My boyfriend Dylan loves your podcast and has even emailed in, which is what made me think it was him.
Okay.
Which he's very happy with himself about. Whether it's cooking dinner or on a long drive, I've heard your voices because where there's Dylan, there's your podcast.
Oh, wow.
She must be tolerant.
Yeah.
I must admit, at first, it wasn't my cup of tea, as I'd never looked twice at a Land Rover before I met my boyfriend. However, we're years in now, and Land Rover chat is just part of my daily routine, and I've grown to enjoy your podcast lots too. Well, thanks very much, Elise. A question for you I have is, how do your wives and partners feel about your love for Land Rovers, and what is your favourite memory involving a Land Rover with them? For me, I'm not sure if you're aware of the yellow car game. Yes, I am aware of the yellow car game. Also, if it works with minis. So if you're in a car with other people and you see a yellow car or a mini, you give them sort of a playful punch on the arm.
Never heard of the mini one.
Have you not?
No.
Maybe it's just me.
Yeah. You do live in the Fens.
Yeah. So do you, though.
Not really.
You do. Anyway, and you give them a little punch and you collect points. We're very competitive, so to ease the tension on long drives, we have introduced Land Rover Kiss, which is quite soppy, but every time we see a Land Rover, instead of punching each other and looking a bit nutty, we have a little kiss. Maybe the Land Rover Kiss game will catch on and we'll drive past you in our Defender and see you kiss. Although I don't endorse kissing while driving, be safe. Hope to hear back from you. Thanks, Elise. Well, thank you ever so much for getting in touch, Elise. And in answer to your question, how does my other half feel about my Land Rover addiction and best memory? Well, my wife she knew what she was signing up for when we got together, because I've always had Land Rovers and she knows that. And I had probably multiple at the time and I was always off doing something. So she was under no illusion. What she saw was what she was going to get, and that hasn't changed.
Lucky lady.
It's probably got worse.
Looking at your garden the other day, it has. Mr. Three Land Rovers.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
You're in no position to talk. You've got two and a Jag. So she's pretty... She's really... I have to say, I 100%... fell on my feet with my wife. She knew what she was getting into, which helped, but she's ever so tolerant of me going off doing events and different things and turning up with vehicles and going and buying parts and whatever else. She is a gem. And favourite memory, probably when we got married, because our wedding venue, we had all my Land Rover and all our friends, some guests' Land Rovers along the front, and it looked really good.
That would have been good, actually. I didn't even have a Land Rover at my wedding.
Why? You wanted a reliable vehicle to get there.
Yeah, they were all in bits probably at the time. I couldn't exactly push a rolling chassis into shock, could I?
Yeah, just sitting on it with a steering con.
Pretending to drive it, vroom, vroom, make vroom, vroom noises. Yeah, it's similar for me, really. So when I met my wife, Louise, it was about 10 or 11 years ago now. On our first date, I turned up in my Discovery One. And she had like a Toyota Auris hybrid.
Okay.
Didn't hold that against her, but I soon converted her to Land Rovers because she thought they were quirky. She thought they were cool. And you know, we got the right partner because I could go and buy another Land Rover right now. Yeah, of course I would ask permission, but I would still say, oh, I found this Land Rover, and she'd be all for it. So she wouldn't be kind of like,
yeah, that's
she's good. Never said no, or you can't buy that part, or she's just gone with it, and which is when you know it's
I tend to, if I'm going to buy something big like a Land Rover, I'll tend to mention it. I'm thinking about doing this, and it will be because I genuinely am, but
she never said no.
She can't really, because you know, like that's what I mean. Like she knew what she was getting into. If I'm going to, I'll ask her advice and, she might tell me it's a bad idea, but I can't be told no. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Generally, it's for better now. Years ago,
yeah, you buy the wrong one, lose
I would money. I would be just losing money hand over fist. My friends, you know, who I'm still mates with now from back then, will tell you like I was an absolute nightmare. But now I make informed decisions about it normally works out for the best. So like Land Rovers. Obviously, I'm, you know, massively passionate. But when things have come up in life, like getting married, for instance, buying a house, I've made good choices and Land Rovers have enabled me to do those things financially.
Yeah. No, I'm similar camp.
What I would say is my other half now, if she sees a Land Rover out and about, parked up or whatever, she'll take a picture and send it to me, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, like, on the hunt for, like, barn finds and field finds Land Rovers?
Kind of, yeah. So she used to get, like, when we'd go out on holiday and that, and I'd see stuff, Land Rovers out and about, she'd be like, oh, God, like, roll her eyes, like, are you taking a picture of that? But now she does it as well, so I like to feel like I've had that influence on her.
So we shout out our defenders, like, defender, like that, when we see one
come up, yeah, okay.
Like that, and even if we're in one or not.
Sure.
Obviously, if you're in one, you'll wave at the other person, but... Yeah, we still shout that out. We do look.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Do you know the biggest concern about Elise's email?
What's that?
Is introducing the kissing game. Imagine if me and you were driving together en route to a job or whatever.
I don't think that applies to us.
It doesn't. It cannot apply to us.
I am
not kissing you whether I see the finest
right now
Land Rover in the world.
It's not happening.
But it sounds to me like, yeah, that Elise and Dylan are well suited.
Yeah, good on you. And thanks for getting in touch.
Yeah.
Right, should we go to the next one?
Oh, yeah, go.
Yeah, no, we've got quite a few of these.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't know if we'll get through them all today. We've got a lot to talk
about. A 2-hour-long podcast.
Yeah, a bumper edition.
Bumper edition.
Liam Sargent gets in touch. He says, hi, Stephen Martin. Sending you many thanks from New Zealand for an excellent podcast with a wonderful mix of entertainment and education. I've very recently picked up my first Land Rover. I've always wanted a Discovery One since my childhood. Something about that V8, the driving position, and the flip-down rear seats. Just do it for him. Anyway, I'd love to have a Disco One podcast. Well, I think over the last two, we've probably covered that now.
Yeah.
With the Car SOS guys and
definitely,
then
definitely have.
The designer of the Discovery One, Mike Sampson, who was kind enough to give up some of his time. What mods would you recommend for adventure style off-roading, which I guess you guys would call green laning? And what's a waste of money? Oh, this could be fun.
Yeah.
What are they great at and what are they not so great at? I've got a few bits to sort out on mine, but I want to do a few upgrades afterwards. And yeah, pretty much. That's him from Liam in Christchurch, New Zealand. So.
Mods for a Discovery One.
Yeah, so if you're going to do... if you're talking about the equivalent of what we would call green laning, the first thing I would buy is a decent set of tyres.
Yeah.
All-terrain, depending on what sort of stuff you're working on. In the UK, a good all-terrain will get you most places, I would say.
Most places that you should legitimately be driving on a green lane.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah. So the times of year that you'll be driving a green lane is when they're not completely churned up or soft. All terrains will definitely do the job, and also they'll make it, it'll be fine on the road.
You might be more like pleasant. Yeah.
Deafened by an extreme mud tire. So I do tires first, and then.
So I think I know the second one.
Go on.
Steering guard.
Yeah, I was going to say some sort of
underbody
light underbody fuel protection fuel tank. Is
fuel tank as well, a real overhang.
Yeah, that's the main downfall of the Discovery one and two. Really, is the rear overhang.
Of course, if you get one with the valance at the front, they're quite low, aren't they?
Yes.
So
yeah, you can either trim that off. Or if you want to keep the original bumper,
yeah, I would take that off and replace it.
Get a steel front bumper with or without provisions for a winch. If you're just doing light off-roading, you won't need to get too worried about buying a winch straight off the bat.
Years ago, someone drove into the back of my Discovery One on route to work.
Right.
In a Nissan Qashqai, and it absolutely, they just accelerated out of a junction thinking I'd gone, but I hadn't.
Right.
And significant damage to their Qashqai, and it dented obviously the bumper in on the back. So I used that as an opportunity. The Discovery actually got written off.
Really?
Yeah, they wrote it off because they weren't sure. I mean, I just got the money back out of it and bought it off to salvage company for like £300. Bought a heavy duty bumper, steel bumper. So it looked at OEM, still with the rear lights, and I wish I'd done that sooner.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't have. Touched it. They're absolutely brilliant. So I would change the bumpers.
I would, yeah, that's actually a great point. So,
and then you could put recovery points on there.
Yes. A heavy duty front and a rear. The first thing I always used to do with any Discovery One that I had was put a heavy duty rear bumper on. Britpart do them.
Yeah, that's what the one I had.
First four off-road.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember
that. They did some gorgeous stuff. They're sadly no longer trading.
They retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, they retired, yeah.
Oh, my first four rear bumper was a work of art. But yeah, so front and rear bumpers, tank guard and tyres, and you'll probably...
And steering guard.
Either a steering guard or some heavy-duty steering arms.
And that would leave it as that.
Yeah, I would. And see how you
probably
go.
Probably a roof rack if you wanted to put lights along the top of it.
Yeah, you want to... See, so many people fall into the trap of buying a standard vehicle and then throwing a catalogue at it. Without sort of finding out, using it and finding out what they need to improve before they do it.
Yes.
As for modifications to avoid, personally, I am not a fan of the really, really cheap, I call them eBay spec light bars, which look good for about 2 weeks and then all the waterproofing fails. They fill up with water, you get like algae inside them and it looks like you're driving around with a fish tank on the roof.
Or a lift kit, no.
Yeah, see,
heavier duty springs if you're carrying a lot of weight. So if you're going camping and you've got a lot of gear in the back, but I wouldn't lift one because they drive fantastically without.
They do, yeah. It's always a compromise, and if you are gonna do your suspension, really do think about what you need from it, and go for the right stuff.
Mm.
Years ago when I had my TD590, I must have gone through five or six sets of springs and dampers trying to get the perfect compromise, the perfect, because suspension always is on an off-road vehicle. You either make it tolerable on the road and brilliant off the road, or standard on the road and you put up with the fact that it's not, hasn't got crazy articulation off-road. But I would honestly put tyres on it, protect it underneath and see how you get on and just add from it from there.
I agree.
But don't go covering it in unnecessary lights and...
winches, all that weight.
Yes. Weight is a huge thing that people don't really take into consideration. And before they know it, their diesel Land Rover is doing 20 miles to the gallon and takes half an hour to get to 60 miles an hour. And that's because it weighs 4 tons now.
Mm.
But...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Talking of upgrades, tell you one upgrade that's really, really taken me. Excuse me, my throat is dry. Really impressed me of late. As you know, we've been doing bits on the 110, haven't we?
On your 110?
Yes.
Yeah, we have.
Upgraded heater fan from Bolt on Bits.
Yes.
What a piece of kit.
Are you
going to
use the pun now?
It's called the Big Power Fanny. They've called it the Big Power Fanny.
Why is it called Fanny?
I don't know. It sticks in your head, I guess.
You're going to go on. It's going on YouTube, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know whether you're going to use the clip.
How to improve.
When you announce his name.
How to
improve. I'm behind the camera. And like I laugh like a child.
But yeah, this is an upgraded heater fan for that goes in the heater box of your Defender 110, 90, whatever. And Defender heaters have a bad reputation, don't they? A bit that people tend to call them a bit useless. And I tend to agree. But this thing, wow.
It's really, really impressive, I have to say.
The switch on my heater control switch only goes to the first speed at the moment. I think I need to replace the switch. It doesn't allow you to go to fan speed number two.
That was number two, wasn't it?
I thought it was on one.
I don't think number one works. I think if that's powerful than that, I put my hand on top of the dash.
Yeah.
When we had it up on the windscreen thing, and the air was whistling between my fingers. It was honestly that powerful.
That adding that fan and sealing up your heater box so it's not blasting air into the engine bay, so it's actually all going into the cab. I'm quite excited for winter because I want to see how quickly that all.
I mean, you'll be spending a long time in it. Because it's natural gas.
We've had it up.
I'll tell you what the biggest fan you need on that is a turbo.
You might be right, Steve. We're going to see how she goes, all right?
I'm really excited to. Because I want to follow you to the MOT.
Yeah.
Because it's as a backup vehicle.
We've got a few tidying up jobs to finish. Yeah. I've got a bumper to put on, the wheels I'm going to change again, new lights, things like that. And then I'm going to book an MOT and you're going to follow me there. And we're going to see. Hopefully it makes it there.
It'll make some. We'll put it on YouTube.
It'll be a YouTube video, yeah.
Will it pass? Will it fail?
Well, I hope it'll pass because I've been through it basically from front to back. There's, apart from a few small electrical things I need to change, I need to buy a horn for it because the original horn is no good. I've got power and a good earth, but the horn is kaput.
Oh, okay.
It should, there's no reason why it shouldn't pass. It's absolutely solid now. All the lights work. All the suspension bushes are okay. It's got new brake pipes. It's got new brake flexies. It's got new cylinders, pads and discs.
Good old bus.
Dampers. She should be all right.
Nothing worse than presenting a car for MOT and it fails. I can't remember. I'm tempting fate here, but I can't remember the last time I took something that failed.
Like I say, I think we both do. I think most people into Land Rovers do keep on top of maintenance. But things like doing a quick walk around, make sure your lights work, make sure your washer bottle's topped up, make sure your wiper blades aren't hanging, things like that. They're just sort of easy things to nip in the bud before you take it and then it fails and then you've got...
It's almost bad manners, I think, taking a car full of MOT and a bulb's out. You think, hang on a minute.
I mean, having worked in the motor trade for nearly 10 years, bulbs being out are like the... They're not even relevant. It's when someone presents a car for an MOT with like three dogs in the back, absolutely packed with rubbish and like mud hanging off it and like the thing stinks and you're just like, how do you live like this? Absolutely grim. But I'm excited to get it on the road and see just how slow it is.
Yeah.
But talking of YouTube, we were over yours yesterday, weren't we, doing a few bits on the old TD5.
Well, yesterday was World Land Rover Day.
It was World Land Rover Day yesterday, yes.
And it got me thinking, so World Land Rover Day, right? So that doesn't seem to have been a thing for only like the last 4 or 5 years. It kind of sprung from somewhere, and I don't know where.
I agree. I don't remember it ever existing back, 10 plus years ago. Maybe not even that long ago. I don't think it really was a thing.
Is it a social media thing, a trend that's cottoned on, and now people share memories of last year's World Land Rover Day and they just remember?
I do believe that.
We didn't even think about it, did we, until we saw something on social media.
No. Apologies to anyone who was expecting a social post, Land Rover Monthly. I was totally covered in used engine oil at the time, so I couldn't actually use my phone to post anything. But it was in our minds and our hearts.
Absolutely. Whilst we were laying underneath my Defender 90.
Yeah.
Fitting anti-roll bars.
We've hopefully made it a bit less wobbly, haven't we?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a wobbly old girl, really, because as our YouTube video that will be out in the next few weeks will show, just going around the roundabout was kind of like...
It was
an event Well, it's just a bit horrible, wasn't it?
It did feel like you were going to scrape your door mirrors on the ground as you went round. It was very topsy-turvy, wasn't it?
Well, the body roll was so significant that... So we were filming with a mobile phone on a gimbal. And a gimbal is a kind of three-axis kind of device, isn't it?
Yes.
And it threw that into a kind of like, where do you want me to be?
Yeah, it wasn't happy.
So even the gimbal picks up on the fact that an angle had changed.
Yeah, it's quite alarming, really, because, I mean, yeah. I was, like I said a few minutes ago about changing suspension setups on defenders, mine was probably similar in weight to yours, possibly slightly lighter because it was a truck cab and it didn't have a roof rack and stuff like that. But the best compromise I could find for on and off-road use was, do you remember people used to fit Range Rover Classic heavy-duty springs for trialling and stuff? The police spec springs.
Oh, the police spec ones, yeah.
Them all round with Pro Comp dampers at quite a loose damper.
Yeah, yeah. Pro Comp, what are they, 3,000 or something?
The ES9000s, I used to use. Oh, 9,000s,
yes.
Because they were dirt cheap and they were basically...
They're like 30 quid a quarter.
They basically stopped the axle from flopping away from the chassis. They didn't actually have much of a... They weren't very stiff at all.
Can you still get them?
I'm not sure. I've not seen them around for a long time.
You often see really old, aged ones on cars, don't you? But you don't really see
with the
shiny
rust
new...
blistering through the white.
Yeah.
I think you can still get them because a lot of people fit the 3000s with parabolic springs on series.
Oh, 3000s. That's why I got that number from somewhere.
But that road, the combination of quite a soft, long spring and a probably under-damped damper... made a defender soak up speed bumps and actually ride quite nicely, and they flexed like nothing on earth off road. I had plus five inch dampers on the back with relocation cones, and it was so supple. You'd struggle to lift a wheel off road. However, the payoff was it was just horrendous round roundabouts, like on a par with yours.
Right,
and
yeah,
the center of gravity was obviously a lot lower because I didn't have a roof rack.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I'm going off on another tangent here. Exciting news for the unsung hero that is my 220,000-mile Freelander 2. I'm actually giving that a bit of love.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my beloved cot tent that you'll probably see me use at most events, I'm kind of ready to make the...
Are you converting to a roof tent?
Take the plunge into roof tent ownership now.
Okay.
Yes. So our good friends at Front Runner... there's a roof rack waiting in my garage to go on the Freelander 2.
Oh,
ready.
I thought it was an idea, not actual.
No,
it's going to happen.
The gears are turning.
Right, okay.
She's getting a roof tent.
Wow. Okay.
I'm excited.
Jay's in the roof tent.
Sorry.
Are you going front runner tent?
I haven't completely decided yet. I'd quite like a hard shell, but they are a lot heavier, and I want to be able to take it on and off. So I think the front runner one being lighter might actually win out.
Yeah, because I think the front runner tent is about 45 kilos from memory.
It's not a lot, is it?
Quite light compared to like a hard shell, which could be 65, 70 kilos.
Yeah.
And you won't get that on and off very easily. Although the Freelander roof line is lower.
True, yeah.
I got mine out the other day, the roof tent, my front runner and the camping trailer. So
I was going to say, you've been doing a few bits on your trailer, haven't you, recently?
So you've worked for me now for 2 or 3 years and you know that... I always do 90% of the job.
Yeah.
so like, there was a few loose ends, and I had an absolutely fantastic day on Sunday tinkering on. So the corner trims of my camping trailer just needed doing. All day I was messing around with that because it's not cut an angle and that's done. Riveting them on and bonding them on. Got the tent out to air that, ready for LRM Live in a couple of weeks.
Yes,
God. 17th, 18th. And
coming
may just
up
get
quickly.
That plug in there quickly.
Yes.
So if you haven't booked your camping tickets, they're selling really fast.
Yeah,
actually.
You want to hurry up and get booked in.
Because that's fantastic showground just to wake up at the Malvern Hills. And then we've got this event, so Land Rover Show. So I'm getting the trailer ready for that. And I've just finished my drawer system that I built from plywood.
Yes.
On the runners and put a drawer front on. So, yeah, I've got that ready.
Yes. Yeah, it's all done.
So you'll get the tent. So
it won't be, I don't think it'll be ready. I mean, A, I want to take the Series 3 to LRM Live because it's kind of not long been finished.
Yeah,
so I want to get that out there because people who will have seen it last year we'll see it this year and hopefully be able to see a difference.
Yeah, i.e. no body filler in it.
No, there's not massive lumps of filler hanging out of the tub, which would be pleasing, I'm sure.
There's a new chassis underneath it.
Yes, and lots of other good bits.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really excited for another MLive. It's going to be cracking.
Mm, not long to go.
Well, no, a couple of weeks. I've got a busy weekend coming up this weekend. If you will be listening to this after it's happened, but Gaydon Land Rover show on Saturday and then the Scale Nationals, Radio Control 4x4 Scale Nationals on Sunday in Derbyshire.
Yeah, I bet that's going to be good fun.
I'm really excited. I'll make
Pete. You've got a proper Land Rover weekend coming up.
I have indeed, yes. Yeah, busy times. Mm. Busy time of year, but no, it's all good fun shooting about them. And it's times like that where you've got two consecutive events on one day after another. That a roof tent comes into its own, because you can book a campsite, go to one event, drive halfway to the next one, camp over and then carry on, get there early in the morning.
Really good, yeah.
And camping's just great, isn't it? I love camping.
Well, we were down one of the Fen roads yesterday, weren't we? Just filming the nice...
So you say, oh, I don't live in the Fens, yet literally opposite your house there's a Fen road. It's called the Fen.
Yeah.
So you do live in
the Fens.
I'm
on the edge of the Fens. I'm not classed as the Fens, eh?
It's literally a road called the Fen. It's called the Fen, Steve. I don't know why you're against it anyway. The Fens are great.
No, they are great.
Big sky.
Big sky, no.
Wildlife.
When I drove out to your house, the scenery is amazing.
Well, I walked my
dog. It's a bit too flat for my liking, though.
But sometimes that's nice.
It is a completely different feel to... I've always lived in sort of hillier areas, but...
Yeah, see, whenever I go anywhere with hills, I'm like, oh, I'm not sure this is for me. My clutch isn't loving this. And if I have to walk up and down hills, I'm not built for it.
Clearly.
Anyway, where was I going with that? I've forgotten.
I've got no idea.
We've gone off on a tangent. Let's have another listener's question.
Yeah, well, I think we were answering the question of, I don't know, we just got, yeah, anyway.
We answered the discovery. Anyway, let's move on. Mark Cooperus has got in touch. He says, Hi, Martin and Steve. Oh, man. Here's an email from an enthusiast reader of the magazine and listener of the podcast from the Netherlands. I love your podcast and I learn a lot from it, and your YouTube videos are helpful as well. Yeah, we've upped our game on YouTube. They're regular uploads now, so yeah. Be sure to subscribe, because it's all good fun. He says, I've attached a picture of my daily driver. I've owned it since January 2024. Would you like to guess what it is?
In the Netherlands... Seriously?
No, Ineos Grenadier Trailmaster.
Well, hang on a minute. This is an LRM podcast.
Well, it's okay, because he goes on to say, my newest project is a Series 3 lightweight.
Well, that's best Series 3.
Yeah, that's not his daily driver, though, is it? It's a project.
I don't know.
Lightweight Series 3 from 1972. It's a rolling project, so technically he could daily drive it, I guess. But anyway... at the moment, I'm stripping it down to get to the gearbox and the clutch, preserve the chassis, then rebuild and spray it with rattle cans. So far, I've fitted a new fuel tank and a new starter motor. In the past, we've owned several Defenders and I've loved spannering on them. The last one we had was a TD5 110, and before that, we had a 300 TDI. The 300 TDI we took for a long holiday road trip back in 2019 to Cornwall, Wales and around Dover, which was absolutely brilliant. Keep up the good work. Yes, you have more listeners than you probably think and readers in the Netherlands. Best regards, Mark. Thanks very much, Mark. And he's attached a picture of his Series 3 lightweight.
Yeah.
And his Ineos. Oh, he's got a white Grenadier. That's cool.
There is a Trailmaster. I like those Grenadiers. The Trailmaster's nice spec.
They're sort of, I've seen more and more of them about now. There seems to be a few on forecourts as well, which I'm not sure is a good or bad thing.
No, I think, they're a difficult one. It gains a lot of interest. People are really intrigued. Land Rover people are intrigued by it. But, yeah, I think there's a dealer network issue now, isn't there? People are not...
They've pulled a lot of dealers out, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
There's only...
It doesn't bode well for the future.
There's only... Because I think BMW dealers take care of some servicing, but actual Ineos dealers, there's not a huge number around anymore, is there?
I don't think it's... It doesn't bode well for the future, in my opinion, but who knows? Stick with your lightweight. That's what I say.
I don't know. I I've been lucky enough to drive one around for a bit. I had one for a week, a petrol one. And I did like it as a vehicle, but I couldn't put that next to a new Defender and spend my hard-earned cash on the Grenadier, I don't think.
And nor could I.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
That said, they have changed a lot of people's opinions who poo-pooed it and badmouthed it when it first came out, and they now own Grenadiers. So it works both ways, I guess. But, yeah, I don't know. So you're 90. Yeah, we were spanning in on that yesterday, weren't we? Give it a good service, didn't we?
We did. Yeah, the service is a bit... I mean, mileage-wise, time-wise, it was overdue. Mileage is bang on like 5,000 miles since the last service.
Yeah.
It's nice to change your oil, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. If you're going to invest money in one element of keeping a Land Rover healthy, decent engine oil regularly is always a good idea. But it did. I mean, it's been a while since I serviced a diesel Land Rover on the drive, and it just highlighted to me how DIY friendly they are.
Very DIY friendly. I mean, I could have done that job, but we were filming, so it was easy, just the two of us to do it. But yeah, we spotted a few things, didn't we? Bit of oil here and there.
Yeah, it's got a few weeps here and there. It's got a bit of a dribbly swivel, hasn't it?
Yeah, I want to get that sorted out, because I tell you for why. I noticed there was oil splashed on the mud flap.
Oh, so really?
It's obviously, as you're going along, it's
blowing back.
Because it's warmer at the moment, the weather.
Yeah.
Because it's sunnier. The oil's thinner, isn't it? And it's blowing back onto the thing. So I noticed it the other day thinking, there's an oil leak here.
Yeah.
And it is that.
Well, you've
got... So I'd rather get them done, really.
I think, yeah, I mean, luckily, we had a little look yesterday. The actual swivel balls are okay.
Yeah, they're
not pitted or anything. No. So, yeah, that'll be a seal replacement. But then also your oil return tube from your oil filter housing to the sump has got a weep as well, hasn't it, on the engine?
Oh, yes, you did show me that.
One of the... It's basically held on with nuts and studs, and I thought, well, one of the nuts was a bit loose, but the stud was turning, so I think we need to take that out, wind the stud further in, and then retighten it. But
if you took that out, would the oil come out then?
No, if as long as you do one at a time, it should be okay. You get a dribble.
Oh, okay, you wouldn't just pour out like you open a sump?
No, I wouldn't remove it totally, but... You should be fine to take one stud out, rewind it in, and then...
Oh, I see. Okay.
But it's just...
It's just that heavy, isn't it?
What, 23 years old now?
It is. But because it's been well looked after for so long, we're going to keep on top of it. You know, when like small jobs mount up.
Yeah.
So servicing, it highlighted to me that, yeah, we did the prop shafts, didn't we? And you just look over things and you notice things before it becomes an issue.
Yeah, definitely.
For example, the coolant level was just a little bit lower than it should.
Yeah.
Which I knew about. We changed the cap on the expansion tank.
Yes.
Just in case that was...
And we also found a small bit... We found some crystallisation around one of the heater hoses, didn't we?
Yes.
Which
not
signifies...
major, but a very small amount.
I mean, it's lost next to no... coolant. It's just below minimum, so yeah, I wouldn't be worried about it. But if you ever see, like, especially on vehicles that use OAT coolant, which is like that pinky orange color, if you ever see like crystallization or like a build-up of that, you've probably got a very slow weep. So we cleaned it up and tightened the clip up a bit more, and we'll keep an eye on it. But it's sometimes, you know, unless you're doing a lot of modifications or other maintenance, sometimes servicing is the only time, like once a year, you'll go under your Land Rover and check it over. So it's well worth making a note of anything you do find, things like brake hoses, brake pipes, suspension bushes, oil leaks, because yeah, they're a relatively basic vehicle, but they need looking after like anything else does. And if you look at that old saying, if you look after your Land Rover, it'll look after you.
Yeah.
And that's true.
It is true.
But yeah, the TD5's a nice engine to work on. I quite like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The full flow oil filter was a little bit fiddly. But other than that, I mean, that only needs changing once every 2 years rather than every year like the main one. But
yeah.
It's all good. I enjoyed it. It was a good fun day. And yeah, the anti-roll bars, as you'll see on YouTube, made a considerable difference, haven't they?
And you made me do them.
Well, I thought it was unfair for me to do all the work.
Yeah.
Like normal.
Yeah. Oh, that's harsh. But it was a really warm day yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've got like an early summer going on at the moment.
Yeah, week. Really, really warm. It was like 25 degrees.
I'm sure by the time people listen to this next week, it will be like back to being grey. And.
But then it'll be sunny again for our show.
So, yeah, we've pre-booked the sunshine. So don't you worry about that. We were walking earlier, weren't we? And we were discussing the various facelift, the various phases, if you like, of Freelander 2.
But I'll tell you why. Because
what happened was,
you parked up in the car park and there was a 2013 model in the car park?
Yes.
And then we spotted there was probably five Freelander 2s in the entire car park, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Various states of kind of...
Various ages,
yeah.
Yeah.
Of faceliftism.
Indeed. So it's funny, you don't really realise until you've got them all to compare how many small changes Land Rover make through the range. Until you've got them to look at. But they're constantly refreshing stuff. Like if you look at Discovery 4, you put an early Discovery 4 next to a really late one.
Yes.
They're totally different. Like wing mirrors are different, lights, grill, front and rear lights, different wheels, colour coding, different bits are colour coded.
It's amazing when you see a very late Freelander 2, like in the car park there's one.
Yeah.
And then say your one.
Yeah.
To the untrained eye, you just think, oh, it's Freelander 2. But then when you see the differences, it's amazing how Land Rover have made, or any car design, I suppose, how the new one makes the old one look old-fashioned.
Yeah, definitely.
But without you really noticing.
Yeah, considering the actual body, the overall shape of the car is no different, but the things that are attached to it make it look like decades apart. Like mine is, I've got Evoque wheels on mine, so it doesn't look totally standard, but it does look tired now.
Well, it's got 220,000 miles.
Yeah, I do think the next thing I do probably will be, I would like a later one, like a 13 or 14, like the latest one I can find. Like Alistair Cusick's just gone and bought a really, really nice high spec 14 plate. Like that would be nice.
When we left the office the other day, there was a just coming up to the roundabout, there was a Metropolis one.
Yeah.
They're really nice, aren't they?
Yeah. They're Metropolis and like the Sport LE, which I'm not a huge fan of the body kit on them, but they're a nice spec.
No, they're a bit too road focused for my liking.
The interiors are nice on them though. They've got like the leather with the strip down the middle, the body coloured stripe, which is quite smart.
I looked at one of those when I bought my Freelander 2. I went to one of these generic car.
Oh, like a supermarket.
Oh.
What was your experience like? Because I've never been to one.
So my daily car, but my wife mostly dailies, is a BMW 3 Series.
Yes.
Estate.
Yeah.
So I don't mind admitting it. But it's a really good car, to be fair to it.
We all have our vices, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. But a really good car. It's a tool. I like it, don't love it, don't hate it. It's a tool.
Sure.
It's an appliance.
Yeah,
for us, does 20,000 miles a year, and I got that from a car supermarket, and I would say that was going to be the first and last time I ever buy from them.
Really?
Yeah, customer experience. It's just a numbers game for them. They don't care. They haven't even looked in the car. So they give you the key. You ask for the key for that car. They give you it. You go and have a look around it, and it's a case of do you want to buy it or not. Off you go.
Interesting.
And I don't know.
See, to me,
they say, oh, we'll put a service on it. And I said, what service have you done? Well, it's just a service. Well, what have
yeah,
you done?
The
body shop there is just constantly bodging up scratches, essentially.
Smart repairs, I think. Smart called.
Very, very smart repairs. So they don't actually prep the cars. They clean them.
Yeah.
But they don't prep them until they've got a buyer on them.
Right.
In a lot of cases, I'm not keen on them. They're like, all the salespeople are like, whoosh, customer. Whoosh.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I think it's difficult. It must be a challenge because those places, like you say, they have that much stock of all different brands that no salesman, no salesperson will know everything.
They don't know anything about any of the cars.
Yeah.
It's just, you're a customer. If I went to look at Freelander 2, that's what I was saying about this late model one. And I went to look at one in one of these generic places somewhere in Northampton. And it was all like, there was bits of trim broken, and it was just, it was an ex-family car, but it was only like a few years old.
Yeah.
I went, will that get fixed? No, mate, what you see is what you get.
Right.
I said, so you won't even fix any of these like obvious problems? No, he said, we don't have the time or inclination to do that. He said, we just churn out these cars. It will be serviced. Right. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And if it's got a certain amount of MOT on it,
they don't put a fresh one on.
They don't put a fresh one. So you might be buying like 9 months MOT.
I have heard stuff like this.
They're churning out, like, I can't remember. I think one of them was selling like 20 cars a day.
Really?
It's a lot of churn over. And you can see why they're not. So I would sooner go and buy a Land Rover from, say, like an independent specialist.
Yeah.
Because they've got a real reputation to uphold.
And they know the cars.
And they probably know the customer because they might have been servicing it for years.
Yeah, true.
I would hunt those out.
I kind of at some point would love to buy a car from a main dealer. I've never done it. Just to see what it's like.
I should imagine the experience is amazing.
I bet it is. Especially now. Like, obviously, I never mention it, but when I used to work at the main dealer, like, I knew all the salespeople really, and they'd all been there quite a long time.
Well, they've been through a proper training regime. They know models, they know your offerings.
And they were really like, if you bought a Land Rover from us, you were really looked after.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to be on the other side of that, if you know what I mean, and be a customer and say, like, I'd love to have that experience, but until
we'd best earn some more money somehow.
Say until I regularly drive past a local dealer and they've got like quite a tempting looking selection of like L663s for sale now. Like, wonder how much money that would be per month.
This is the thing. So the way people buy modern cars now, it's X amount per month. It's it's an appliance. Even though if it's a Land Rover, it's still an appliance.
Well, it's still
a status symbol, or however they want to look at it.
The fact of the matter is, very few people buy anything out right now, which is probably not a bad thing because it's just money tied up that's going. But
yeah, no, I get that.
I don't know. I've always bought Land Rovers privately. I think I can't remember ever buying one from anywhere else. I think I've always bought them privately.
See, I bought my Discovery 3 from a really reputable... and Tom Barnard bought his Discovery 4 from the same dealer.
How did that work out for you?
Good. Well, no, it was. No, hang on, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it just so happened.
It was great for like 500 miles.
No, absolutely. No, and I still think I didn't have that many problems, although I did. My bank balance would argue.
Yeah.
But that's just a Discovery 3 ownership.
Yeah, just Discovery 3.
Or Discovery 3, Discovery 4.
No, they are good.
And I was doing 20,000 miles a year in that car, so of course things are going to wear out. But he did look after the stock that he had, and he presented that car as good as it possibly could be.
Yeah.
And I think he was a decent garage. Just got to hunt them out.
Yeah, sure. There is a lot of them about. And,
you pay a premium, though, don't you? That's the trouble.
You do, but long term, it probably does make sense to do that rather than... I mean, I was going back to the car supermarket thing.
Mm.
That seems to be where a lot of late Freelander 2s and the early Disco Sports, the ones you would actually want, are for sale, because I guess people trade them in. They get to a certain age, people they see something they like at a car supermarket, go there, trade it in, they put a load of tar shine on it, hoover it out, and then put that trading up for sale.
Mm, yeah.
Unless they're all bought from auction. We should get Tom back on, really. He would know all about this.
Well, you know these We Buy Any Cars?
Yeah.
They'll put certain stock into... You know, they'll put certain...
Yeah, well, they're owned by British Car Auctions, aren't they?
Yeah, so they'll put certain level of stock into those kind of... They bid amongst themselves, don't they, beyond that?
Yeah.
So they all go to the compound, they bid British Car Auctions, the trade go out, but there's like almost like a secondary, the kind of cars you and I might look at. Yeah, like...
The chod.
Yeah, that hasn't quite made the grade. Stephen Martin probably buy that. So,
yeah.
You know, they're the sort of things that get sent out to the secondary dealers, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah, we should get Tom back on. Cause
yeah, he's a good...
Everyone's interested in buying Land Rovers.
He knows his onions, doesn't he?
Well, the other day, I'll tell you a story. So I drove So we, because we drive sometimes company cars, don't we? And we hire cars, we have to meet driving standards, don't we?
Yes.
You did the training the other day.
Yes.
I did mine in a Volvo XC40.
Okay.
What a horrible thing that was.
You dislike strongly every car that you drive, though, that isn't your BMW or your Land Rover.
No. I'll tell you why, right? So I'm driving this thing. And I'll tell you why. The guy that's doing the training, he had an early Evoque.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, good chap.
Yeah, 2.2. I did double check.
I was going to say.
I said, 2.2, yeah. I said, do not...
I was going to say,
don't be tempted to get a later one.
Unless it's post 2020 and they're okay again.
Have problems. Apparently. Because I know, but no reason. Anyway, so I drove this Volvo thing the other day, and this guy is assessing your ability to drive safely and to meet the standards. And
yeah, sure.
Next thing, I'm coming up, it was like a crossroads, which I have right of way through. It's the main road. It jabs the brakes on for me. What an
Yes.
It detected a car coming up to the junction and thought the car may or may not stop. It jabbed the brakes on. What on earth is going on? What a load of junk. I don't know if modern Land Rovers are like this, are they?
Yeah, they are. They're all lane departure, collision avoidance.
Jab the brake. Can you turn that off?
You can turn it off, and it's the first thing I do whenever I get in anything modern.
But this car wasn't obvious as to where you turn that off. I'm on this driving assessment. It's a 45-minute drive. You have to go through A roads, B roads, residential streets and stuff to kind of do it. And I didn't know the car. I can't do it.
Thankfully, Land Rover do make it very easy. It's a button on the left hand of the steering wheel. You press it twice. You press it once and it comes up on the menu, driver assists, and then you press it twice to turn everything off. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I was on Discovery 5, it was commercial launch. So it was Discovery 5 van and 90 and 110 hardtop Defenders. And I was driving the Disco 5 on the road, and all of a sudden it wrenched the steering wheel out of my hands because it thought I was going to go up onto the white line, and it absolutely terrified me. I knew it had lane departure and all that stuff, but it was genuinely felt dangerous.
But you see, the thing is, to get round the bend, you're supposed to use the road, aren't you? You can go over the white line, or if you go into a left-hand bend, you can get an early view by going over the line. They want you to sit exactly in the middle of the lane.
Yeah.
And it's just not the right way of driving, in my opinion. It's not an advanced technique.
It's the driving. Like you say, when it slammed the brakes on, it's that it takes you by surprise and throws you out of your concentration.
And yet, stupidly, coming back into town where we're based in Bourne, the biggest hazard that was on that entire journey was somebody overshot the junction coming up.
Yeah.
But I was already out. It didn't detect that one.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's not.
No.
I think it's legislation that's brought this all in, but to me it's just a bad idea. And as I say, the first thing I do is turn it off. We've
gone off some tangents this time, haven't we?
But on the flip side, yeah, we have, yeah. We were talking yesterday, weren't we, about crashing things. And if you crashed a Series or a Defender, you'd know about it, wouldn't you? Have I crashed one? Yeah, I have. Talking of discoveries, actually, and you said someone wrote off your Discovery. I hit a bus in my old Discovery, and the bus exploded. And my Discovery needed a front wing, a bonnet, a light, and I needed to ease the inner wing out slightly, and it was perfect. All the panels bolted back up, and it was back on the road the same week.
So mine was back on the road. It's just that because someone drove into it, and the dent was not that significant, but it was easier because it was a lower value car of around £2,000, say. The guy said, I can't sign it off and say that it's
because they'll all quote from new parts for it as well.
They would, there was probably a little bit of a scare there. He said, no, I can't. I said, right, it's going to get written off.
Cars are, they're so, I know,
but
there's a whole sort of there's a whole like backhandy type culture to insurance and body shops and auctions that we won't go into, but it's so easy for something to get written off now. It's ridiculous. My mate's Range Rover Sport got written off for someone nudging it in a car park and scraping a corner of the bumper, and it's just like ridiculous. But yeah.
But you know, this channel's sponsor, Adrian Flux, and at the time, that Land Rover was insured with Adrian Flux, and it was absolutely perfect.
I have to say. Actually, yeah.
When your insurance company is only as good as when you're going to make a claim or there's an issue. That's when you know if they're any good or not. And 10 out of 10, I have to say.
I can't remember if I still am or not. I was with Flux when the bus hit me. I didn't hit the bus. There's a whole story behind this that I won't go into. But they tied up all the loose ends and sorted everything out by the time, and I didn't even know about it. I rang them up and said, how is this getting on? Oh yeah, we've settled it, it's fine. And my insurance premium went up like 70 quid the next year. I was expecting a horrendous rise and it wasn't.
It's amazing. That bad. Yeah, that's good.
But cool.
Stick to the specialists that know what they're doing with insurance, especially if it's your pride and joy and it's the Land Rover, because...
Yeah, don't mess about. And if you're going to go through any of them, get an agreed value, especially...
You could do that, can't you, if it's...
You've got options on most policies, yeah, to do it, because then you've got that peace of mind. Should the worst happen, that you're not going to be out of pocket if your pride and joy goes missing.
We probably do need to get somebody in from insurance, from Adrian Flux, to discuss. That'd be quite an interesting point. So if anyone's got questions about insurance, probably worth emailing editorial@lrm.co.uk.
Yeah.
We can compile a number of questions...
And you'll hear the information straight from the horse's mouth.
And then we'll get the information, because it's a subject that comes up quite a lot. We get asked a lot about insurance.
We do.
And buying Land Rovers, so the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, and any sort of feedback or anything like that, any questions, like Steve said, editorial@lrm.co.uk. And also, if you'd be so kind as to leave us a little rating on your preferred streaming platform.
Only a good rating, mind.
Yeah, ideally. Ratings. But be honest, leave a review if you want to leave us some feedback, then do. You know, we've got thick skin. And subscribe to our YouTube channel and buy the magazine. Do all the stuff. We just want to give you the best Land Rover content we can.
In the world.
In the world. But yeah, no, it's all good.
And we do.
We do try, don't we?
We do try very hard.
Talking of which, we should probably get back to it and craft.
We've got a show to organise.
Yeah, we have.
I know you're doing a magazine. To do. On show duties today, so... Finalising the plan and the exhibitor list.
Haven't we got some good traders?
Oh, man. The exhibitor list will be going live. It probably will be live by the time this podcast goes out. So check out Land Rover Monthly's website. Check out LRM Live and the exhibitor list. If it's a trade that you want to go to a show to see, you know, headline sponsors, Optimil, you know, got all manner of trade there.
Yeah.
So there's something for everybody there.
Britpart sponsoring the arena.
Yeah.
4x4
4x4 tires.
Yeah, 4x4 tires.
Club awards.
Sponsoring the awards.
Awards, should we say?
Not just
club awards, but the awards.
Yes, indeed.
And if you think you've got the best modified Land Rover, the best expedition vehicle, the best restored, the best original, all of those lovely awards, and you think you've got the best, come along to the show, because you might just win a trophy.
Exactly, yeah. The coveted LRM awards.
Yeah, not just any old award.
No. No, it's going to be a cracking weekend. I'm very excited.
Can't wait. You're on catering duties.
So I'll be back on burning all the halloumi again. But anyway, right, we need to go and do some work. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.